part of our life, right? The life we live. We live with, surrounded by technology, and you know, there is issues that we cannot control. But I'm glad you're on and we're ready to talk. And I'm as excited as you guys are to share my story.
Yes, thank you for being so patient. Thank you.
Absolutely, Art. Well, I just want to say very thankful to have you on the show, and welcome to Radio and TV Entertainment, AM/FM podcast show, and I'm very thankful to have also my celebrity co-host, Miss Woody, comedian Miss Woody. Mr. Art, you know a lot about technology. I've got a chance to really kind of dig deep about your background, and you have such an interesting background. So intelligent, I must say.
I guess when it comes to entertainment or actors, the bar is probably low, but I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of very educated people, but yeah, I have a background in engineering. I'm an engineer by education and trade. I worked as a software engineer for several years before I made the switch to entertainment business. I worked in finance. I worked with companies like New York Stock Exchange, Weight Watchers, Sprint. I had thankfully a very successful career as in IT consulting and business consulting before I made this switch.
Absolutely. And then, of course, you're in a current film with a very well-known independent director and producer, Mr. Sujiva, I believe.
Sujiva Ekanike. Yeah, we did this film that we talked about last time we were on your show, Werewolf Ninja Philosopher, which he wrote, directed, and produced. Fantastic art comedy, and we played all over the country, New York, Chicago, and we got some rave reviews, so that was fantastic. That was my first feature film as a lead, which was a great experience. The journey from, being the guy who wanted to be an actor and was watching other actors on screen, on big screen at times, and then, being the guy who was working in corporate world, your usual 9-to-5, I was working 80 to 100 hours a week, though, but the consulting job is like that, to being the person who's with a poster outside the theater and the film playing up on the screen with the views in Chicago Tribune and others. I have bigger dreams, but that was a dream come true, right? And the journey where I want to be, it was a big step and big achievement in that journey. So thanks to a fantastic team that Sujiva put together, a great idea, good film. So it was a great experience. It was a lot of fun.
It seemed like a lot of fun. I love that my favorite scene is when you're the wolf and you're on the hunt, and then you do this sort of a groovy little move as you're...
Yeah, it's a different kind of werewolf. I would definitely say that. It's nothing that people have ever seen in American cinema or world cinema, probably, because it's a very different kind of werewolf. He's a werewolf, he's a ninja, he's a philosopher, he's a private detective. He's so many things in one, and that's where the humor comes from, his thought process, his philosophy, his lifestyle and everything, where humor comes from. But it's also very philosophical and smart film. It was a lot of fun to work.
I love the classic black and white. Very, very classic. It just brings you into the drama of it all in the film. What was the mood to that choice? How did you feel about being in a black and white classic film?
That was, as they say, some wonderful things happen by choice, and some wonderful things happen by mistake, and some wonderful things happen because you have no choice. So it was one of a combination of a lot of those things, because, you know, we wanted to have a certain look, and with the time and makeup and everything that we were working with, it was hard to get, you know, the original makeup when we tried took like 8 to 10 hours. It was like very extensive. So we had to do a toned down version, which was easier to shoot with. And, you know, it did not look as good as we wanted to. That's one part of it. And so that was one thing that kind of pushed us towards maybe we should try it black and white. And we did, and it looked fantastic. And New York looks beautiful in black and white. I mean, you know, so many classical, amazing films have been shot in Manhattan and New York City in black and white. So I think there's a combination of those things pulled together that makes made us make the film in black and white. And it looks amazing. You know, New York City looks amazing in black and white. It has so much character, so much color, that you don't even need colors when it comes to New York City. It just looks fantastic in black and white.
I love it, and I like the interest in those films that do like the black and white and color. What is that called when they do something? When they'll do a movie like in black and white, and then they'll do most of it in color, and kind of like flip flop. I'm trying to see what movie title that I can bring up that I've seen it in.
I mean, I think I might have seen some films like that, but can't think on top of my head.
Yeah, I think it was one movie that was real popular that got an award here lately.
I don't know what's going to come to me later on in the interview, but I find everything you're saying quite fascinating, so go ahead, I just wanted to bring it up. Well, you know, there's so much to be said about, you know, the amazing gifts that you have, you know, to a lot of what you've put towards within your career in the entertainment. And you've done a lot of you know, focus study in acting too. You took in the Meiser technique, and I know a little bit about it, but you know, what was your experience learning these techniques, especially when you learned from Kevin Spacey? I thought that was just awesome, amazing that you learned from him.
So I mean, the thing with I really believe in training. You know, I think that training is very important in anything that you really want to do, right? You know, some people are naturally great, you know, and that's amazing if you're natural. But even if you're natural, training helps. Like, either you're talking about sports, you're talking about art, and anything that you say or do, I think training helps. So then I really wanted to be an actor, and I really thought that if I am serious about making it as a career, it would be a good idea to train. And I was fortunate to be in New York City. I mean, New York City has one of the best teachers and best acting in the world, right? With the Broadway and theater and everything. It's just amazing. So I was fortunate to, you know, I did some small things at New York Film Academy and met some really good teachers, but eventually I decided to commit to a long-term program, like, you know, where you can really learn, because that's also important, the duration of training. And it's like almost 2 years program called Meiser Technique, if you, I'm sure you've heard of it. And it's considered the method acting techniques by this great acting teacher, Sanford Meisner, who came up with that. And it was amazing. I mean, they have wonderful exercises from repetition to, like, you know, improv, how you respond to a moment. And what I really learned from that was, you know, how to be truthful in a moment, because acting is reacting, right? Like, if you're just trying to play something the way you think, that would never come out as natural, right? The audience is smart. They can see if you're being natural or not.
Absolutely.
So that really helped me understand to be in that moment, right? Get yourself in that character's shoes, right? And absorb the character. And then the big thing, which it is, like, you know, when you have two people in a scene, and since I would say as an actor, that was something I struggled with, right? I always thought I was good, but the chemistry, what do you see, like two actors together, does it really work? Because am I just acting my lines, or am I in the scenes and living the life of that character? And what happens? And when somebody else says something, do I respond in a certain way? Which I think is an important part of acting. And when you train something like Meisner Technique and others, there's various other programs that are great too. But it really helped me understand the importance of reacting truthfully to something that's being said. And I think that's the difference between good acting and great acting.
Absolutely. Which method do you more cling to? It seems like you cling more to the method acting. Is that right? Or do you have other preferred techniques as well?
I'll say that, and that's an interesting question, right? I know you train, but I would always say that you do what works for you, right? And not every character is like that, where you can apply method acting. So I think it, for me, depends on the character. Like I just earlier this year I did an off-Broadway play called Sandstorm, and it was about like 11th century Baghdad, where it was a golden period in Baghdad, and how the winds were turning, how Islam was getting more radical, and I played character of this radical Islamic scholar who was really believes in Islam, and he's trying to change the world, and it was something for me very interesting to understand how people get so strongly motivated on a subject. Very politically charged time right now, right? Where people are very passionate about whatever it is they believe in. And I took that opportunity in that sense to, like, talk to people, do research, and put myself in that character, that how somebody can get so far, left or right, whatever position you hold, but so passionate about something that you believe in that you forget everything else. You forget people you love. You forget people you care about. So it was a combination of many techniques. I think when I was doing that, it was close to method acting, where I really tried to put myself in, which is very stressful, very draining. But I think that's where the reality of the character comes, and that's what audience can see and relate to, because you're being truthful. You're showing them something that they will not be able to see otherwise, through as an actor. And I think that's actor's responsibility, to show audience things that they won't be able to see otherwise. And different techniques, including method acting, really help in being able to pull that.
Wow. Without me even seeing this film, I want to see this film that you're in. And I know that you're a man, as I pull from my research, that you are a man that really is passionate about filtering diversity and immersing yourself into finding a claim and understanding from other perspectives of what diversity is, and you're passionate about that. Where does that come from?
Thank you for bringing that up, but I think it's very important, right? I am a brown man, right? so I'm not a white man. I'm an immigrant. I came to this 12 years ago from India. I was born and raised in India, and I came here 12 years ago, and I chose this country as my home, like many of our ancestors did, right? In America, it's a country of immigrants. Some came by will, some were forced into coming here, but there's very few people who originally belong here. And now this country's been, I sometimes feel like, people forget that we are all different, but we are all one. And, there's sections of people or genders, like, there's women, there's people of color, black, brown, Asian, who are comparatively disadvantaged because they do not have equal opportunity, right? I was very fortunate to have a great job and a great career, and, that's how I came to America. So I did not have to go through certain struggles that people who are born here have to go through. But when I switched my career in this direction, I had to face those challenges too of not being a white man in an entertainment industry. It's much better than it used to be, and I agree it's hard for anyone. What you guys are doing, you're in entertainment business yourself. It's hard as you know, a woman of color. You're doing this wonderful thing. It's hard for anyone, but when you're a person of color, it becomes so much harder. And I just don't. I strongly believe that all voices need to be heard. Right? We all live in this country. All our voices are important, and unless all our voices are heard, we cannot live in a beautiful, harmonious, equal world if we don't have equal opportunity. And yeah, good. To promote that, I would do anything and everything to make that happen.
It's magnificent, magnificent that you you are so immersed into making this prolific and making it very come to the very surface of what it truly means and what our diversity means in society. And it is ever changing and ever evolving, you know, as we go on, to into the future. And this is what basically Miss Woody, she stands upon herself. So I heard her in the background like, yes.
Yes, I know, yes.
No, Miss Woody, I'm with you. I mean, that's the thing. And we have to tell our stories, right? I think this is, we're in a time with technology and everything else available, like you are doing as well right here, that you have to take ownership of telling your story. I don't want to be, rude or paranoid, but we cannot rely on the system or the people who have been doing this for decades or centuries. We have to come forward and tell our stories, and I know that our stories are beautiful enough that the people want to hear them, people want to know them, and when we do that, that's how the narrative is going to change. So it's very important that we take that role at every step possible as storytellers, as podcasters, as a writer and actor, or as a producer, or as a person living on this planet, living on this country. We take every opportunity to tell our stories and show that we are the same. We are people too. We have stories. We have value.
Yeah, I love that. And I had to be creative with telling my story, being a comedian. When I mentioned the title of my documentary, people laugh, but it is a subject title that is not so funny. But the title of my documentary, my story, is called The Day I Almost Went Postal. And me being a comedian, people instantly laugh, but it's a very serious story about dealing with bullying in the workplace. But I just, had to bring that up when you were saying about telling your story and being creative about telling your story.
Congratulations on that. I mean, it makes me very happy, and I think that's another thing which I strongly believe is supporting each other, right? We cannot just be fighting our own fight for ourselves, right? If you're telling a wonderful story, it's my responsibility to hear it, support you as in any way possible that I can to get it out there. And we all have to do it for each other. And the moment we start doing that, it wouldn't take long for so many beautiful stories to be around and people to see us as people with value. And that's how the world changes, I believe. I think that's the biggest reason I wanted to be a storyteller, that I had a job and a career and where I was making a lot of money. I was quite successful, thankfully. But I wanted to do something at some point, something more meaningful, which I was not able to do in the business world. Because as storytellers, we have much more power than people realize. We write the history of the world by the way we tell the stories, right? We show people. I was fortunate enough a few months ago to meet the great, Robert De Niro. And I had a very short conversation with him, and he was very kind with and generous with his time. But that's exactly what he said, that as storytellers, either we are actors, writers, producers, podcasts, or it's our responsibility to tell the stories and help the stories to propagate and reach to people who do not know about them. Because the biggest problem, problems we have in the world is people don't know. They just know what they know about themselves. They don't know about others. And you fear what you don't know. But when you learn about others through those stories, the fear dissipates and you start if not loving, at least respecting them as people. And that's where things start to change.
Absolutely. You know, it's just like the story that I, because I'm also, I've written a screenplay myself, and it's based upon two aspects, you know, of, you know, African Muslims, and also about Mansa, who was the wealthiest man, you know, in history. And it's not really said in the history books. You won't find his story. You'll have to actually research to find that story. But no one ever matched his wealth. But he was also Muslim, too, an African Muslim. And he actually conquered Timbuktu. And and I was, you know, that story. And it's sort of like a reflection. And it actually reflects, you know, in the same realms as, you know, periodical history. Within you know, the 60s history, when it comes to the riots with you know, in the Malcolm X era at that point, so you know, it is true. You know, you have to, when we look at the media, it says a lot, you know, what's true, what's not true. And people now more than ever want to hear more truth, and whenever they can find it. And there's so much out there that that you can research, and I know that you have to be the most creative man out there, because at 16 years old you won an award for writing. Was it? Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was my one night of glory. Yeah, I was 16, and there was a national competition to write a play, and I used to write, and I think I was writing when I was 7 or 8. I would write like plays in the school. Like I would read something here and there, and I would write my own play, and we'll do it in like school performances and stuff like that. So I was always writing and stuff, and then I was writing for school magazines, you know, different kind of stories and poems and stuff like that. But then there was this national competition, and I was like, well, I gotta do this. And I wrote this play about, you know, in India and many, you know, underdeveloped countries, there's child labor. It's changing, but, you know, it's still a problem, children having to work. And so I wrote a play around this kid who is basically working and supporting his family, an 8-year-old boy, and a day in his life, what happens and how his life completely transforms in a day because of his history and everything, and it was because his father. So it was, I don't know where and how I actually got it from, because, you know, you write from your life experiences and stuff and things you see around, and you know, my father was in the Air Force, so I traveled a lot around, and you travel, then you get lots of experiences from traveling. So I put that all together and I wrote it, and next thing you know, I mean, I had won a national award in that, and you know, it was great. It was a great experience for that night. I think I don't know if I was fully prepared to appreciate and admire what I was getting. You know, again, I was very young and I was still in high school and everything, but that was great. But that did give me confidence, right? I think every award, I really believe, right, that any award and stuff, well, what does it mean? The recognition only means just that it gives you confidence that, yes, you know, somebody believes in what I do or appreciates what I do. I don't think you create art just for yourself. That's something I strongly believe in. I know some people, like, I don't care if anybody likes it or not, but I think you're in the wrong business if that's your attitude, you know. Okay, everybody may not like what you're doing, and that's normal. But I assume you do care about somebody liking and appreciating it. So that's, I mean, that award was a big confidence booster at that time. But then after that, I went to engineering and everything. But that was one of the reasons I kept going back to writing besides acting. That I was like, you know, I did that, and it was a great experience, and it was a good story. I think I can write. And as I was talking earlier, you know, when you start telling your story, especially as a person of color, right, you have to create your own content at some point. You can't rely on other people to write for you, because they don't know you. They don't know your experiences. If they do, they won't be able to tell the stories honestly. So, you know, that award at 16 is what gave me confidence to I do screen tapes and stuff now, and I think I had shared earlier that, you know, we're just working currently on a movie screenplay with the independent studio here in New York, a feature film with a writing partner of mine. And, you know, and many other things are also brewing. Besides that, I'm working on a TV show, a TV pilot, and another movie. That all comes from things that started when I was young, and, you know, that award at 16, which brought me here to do the things that I'm doing right now.
You know, people are definitely, that are listening in, are going to be looking forward to seeing more of your work, because you are a literal champion when it comes to writing. I mean, you have a magazine that you are part, that you lead, I believe. You're the chief editor, I think, for the New York
Times. Yes, yes. My New York Eye. That was a passion project with a friend. And, you know, writing partner now of mine, Natasha Sandoval, who is in New York, and, you know, started that to share stories, the same idea, right? New York is wonderful, and there's a lot of stuff that you get to hear, but there's so much that you don't get to hear. It's like, you know, I got to do something about it and share things that people don't get to hear about. Go, you know, either it's a restaurant, or either it's a TV, you know, either it's a Broadway show, off-Broadway show, a theater, and, you know, there's so many small nice things, a musical event, and an independent film, and, you know, and stuff like that that, you know, gets lost in so much noise, because there's so much noise right now. So I decided to start that, and, you know, it's been great. I've had the opportunity to talk to and meet with and collaborate with wonderful people through my New York Eye, and, you know, help them, give them a platform to, again, share their voice and share their stories that they're creating and things that they're doing.
I always commend those who are, you know, very passionate enough to share their own original content. I love original work, because it doesn't come from anywhere else but the passion of those who create it. And I would love to get a copy of my New York Eye, if I can get it. Where can someone find your magazine?
Yeah, you can go to mynewyorkeye.com, and, you know, most of our stuff is there. And with My New York Eye, we're also producing original content, and we did a short film, Culture of All of 5 Cents Each, which won multiple awards and in the Film Festival Circle. That was a story of, you know, these guys who pick bottles and cans for recycle. So it was a story of a guy, a day in his life as he goes through the city picking bottles and cans, and how people treat him for what he is. So we created that. We did a documentary short around the same subject of people who pick bottles and cans. So we're also working along with, you know, giving platform to other people and doing interviews and helping people get their voice out. We're creating original content as well with My New York Eye.
Wow, and something made me choose that particular movie poster for this particular movie that you created. Five cents, is that right? For your film?
Yeah, Kachrawala, 5 cents each. The Kachrawala basically is a Hindi word which means like the, you know, trash man. And 5 cents each is because, you know, those bottles have, like, you know, each bottle is 5 cents, right? So that's where the title comes from, 5 cents each.
Oh, amazing. Something made me choose that to talk about this this amazing experience speaking with you on the podcast show this evening, and it really spoke to me. Where can someone find your current film that you're creating for 5 cents each?
Well, we haven't released it in public yet, because we were still doing like festivals and stuff. But I think the best way to keep up is, you know, mynewyorkeye.com. Everything that's happening, we keep updating there. And for my own work, artshreyan.com, my first name, last name, artshreyan.com is I update everything and anything that's going on. So we've produced and we plan on bringing that film uploading for public later this year. And then another project that we're working on, that's around substance abuse and opioid crisis. That another project that I'm writing and working on, that's probably gonna be out next year. So yeah, there's a few things that are brewing, and mynewyorkeye.com and artreon.com is the best place to keep up. I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, everything. Just find me. That's the best way these days to just find out what people are doing, right? You know, they're all out there. Check that out.
Yes. And I one thing I can definitely relate to when it comes to creative art, my oldest son is a graduate of the Art Institute of Chicago, and he has artwork everywhere. And I love creative people. And I know people like what I do as a comedian, but just to dip and dab with art and technology and mixing it, I love it. Especially when it comes to filmmaking.
Comedy is hard. Comedy is hard. I feel like making people laugh is one of the hardest things to do, and also one of the best things to do, because you know you're giving them joy. What you do, that's amazing.
I love it. I'm out in the community. I just love just freestyling and just off the dome talking to people, and then just having a comedic reaction just with a normal conversation. It's just a natural thing that us comedians do. We can just, you know, go right into a stand-up act just by having a simple conversation with someone. But yes, thank you for that. Some people just don't know. It's not the easiest thing, but when it comes naturally for us, then it's not really that hard. But I love it.
That's a story for next time. But yeah, I did try my hand on stand-up once, and I very quickly realized that it was not for me. I should stick to acting and writing. Stand-up is a completely different kind of art form. You know, it's very hard to have people, you know, make people laugh, telling jokes in that kind of setting. So yeah, I commend what you do, and I don't think I can do that, so I have more respect for that.
Yeah, you definitely have to know the audience and have a feel for, and every joke that you tell can be turned into something that could be dark or light, or it all depends on the audience. You have to know how to deliver it and basically say it in a sensitive way, depending on the audience. But you definitely have to have some creativity with delivering jokes depending on the audience.
Absolutely. You know, it's such an amazing experience speaking with you this evening, Art, and I want to say that we want to keep up to date with everything you're doing, because you're creating a lot of things that are that are yet to come, and that people are probably going to be on the edge of their seats to with anticipation to find out more about it. I want to thank you so much for coming and being on the podcast show, Mr. Art, and we're definitely going to keep up to date with you and have to do a part two again.
Thank you so much for having me, Yolanda and Miss Woody. I mean, this is wonderful. You guys are amazing. I really appreciate what you're doing. You know, you're bringing voices of so many people and sharing with the world. Like, you know, you have a passion for storytelling. I can, you know, and sharing people's stories. And that I have so much respect for that. I love that. And yes, I would absolutely love to be back and share more. You know, what's going on? As I said, I'm working on so many things, especially on the writing front. There's a movie, there's a TV show, there's another movie. So a lot of things that are brewing right now, but you know the nature of the business, right? You know, things take their own time. There's only as much control as you have. So yeah, things are brewing. I would love to share more everything else that's happening, and I can't wait to be back. But until then, thank you so much for having me, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. Absolutely. Have a great weekend, Mr. Arndt. And thank you again. We're looking forward to having you again on the show. And that's everyone. That's Mr. Arndt from the upcoming independent film that will be coming out. We'll talk about that more later on Radio and TV Entertainment, AM, FM, Pocket Show. Thank you, Mrs. Woody. Thank you, Mr. Arndt. Be on the show. Bye, everyone.
Are you a talent trying to make it in the world of entertainment? The way to do that is through social media. But how? With the ebook, How to Profit in Entertainment, Social Media Guide from author Yolanda Nolly. This incredible book will teach you how to brand yourself and how to earn profits using social media and other entertainment media platforms. The entertainment agencies will be offering you high-paying jobs. How to Profit in Entertainment, Social Media Guide. Order your copy today on Amazon and everywhere else.
Technical issues are part of our life, right? The life we live. We live with, surrounded by technology, and you know, there is issues that we cannot control. But I'm glad you're on and we're ready to talk. And I'm as excited as you guys are to share my story.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being so patient. Thank you.
Absolutely, Art. Well, I just want to say I'm very thankful to have you on the show. And welcome to Radio and TV Entertainment, AM, FM, Podcast Show, and I'm very thankful to have also celebrity co-host, Miss Woody, comedian Miss Woody. Mr. Arndt, you know a lot about technology. I've got a chance to really kind of dig deep about your background, and you have such an interesting background. So intelligent, I must say.
I guess when it comes to entertainment or, actors, the bar is probably low, but I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of very educated people, but yeah, I have a background in engineering. I'm an engineer by education and trade. I worked as a software engineer for several years before I made the switch to entertainment business. I worked in finance. I worked with big companies like New York Stock Exchange, Weight Watchers, Sprint. I had thankfully a very successful career as in IT consulting and business consulting before I made this switch.
Absolutely, and then of course you're in a present current film. With a very well-known independent director and producer, Mr. Sujiwa, I believe.
Sujiwa Ekanayake. Yeah, we did this film that we talked about last time we were on your show, Werewolf Ninja Philosopher, which he wrote, directed, and produced. Fantastic art comedy, and we played all over the country, New York, Chicago, and we got some rave reviews, so that was fantastic. That was my first feature film as a lead, which was a great experience. The journey from, being the guy who wanted to be an actor and was watching other actors on screen, on big screen at times, and then, being the guy who was working in corporate world, your usual 9-to-5. I was working 80 to 100 hours a week, though. But the consulting job is like that. To being the person who's who had a poster outside the theater and the film playing up on the screen with reviews in Chicago Tribune and others. I have bigger dreams, but that was dream come true, right? And the journey where I want to be, it was a big step and big achievement in that journey. So thanks to a fantastic team that Sujiwa put together, a great idea, good film. So it was a great experience. It was a lot of fun.
It seemed like a lot of fun. I love that my favorite scene is when you're the wolf and you're on the hunt, and then you do this sort of a groovy little move.
Yeah, it's a different kind of werewolf. I would definitely say that it's nothing that people have ever seen. in American cinema, or world cinema, probably, because, you know, it's a very different kind of werewolf. He's a werewolf, he's a ninja, he's a philosopher, he's a private detective. He's so many things in one, and that's where the humor comes from, his thought process, his philosophy, his lifestyle and everything, where humor comes from. But it's also very philosophical and smart film. It was a lot of fun to work.
I love the classic black and white. Very, very classic. It just brings you into the drama of it all in the film. What was the move to that choice? How did you feel about being in a black and white classic film?
That was, as they say, some wonderful things happen by choice, and some wonderful things happen by mistake, and some wonderful things happen because you have no choice. So it was one of a combination of a lot of those things, because, you know, we wanted to have a certain look, and with the time and makeup and everything that we were working with, it was hard to get, you know, the original makeup when we tried took like 8 to 10 hours. It was like very extensive. So we had to do a toned down version, which was easier to shoot with. And, you know, it did not look as good as we wanted to. So that was one part of it. And so that was one decision, thing that kind of pushed us towards maybe we should try black and white. And we did, and it looked fantastic. And New York looks beautiful in black and white. I mean, you know, so many classical, amazing films have been shot in Manhattan and New York City in black and white. So
oh, yes.
I think there's a combination of those things pulled together that makes made us make the film in black and white, and it looks amazing. You know, New York City looks amazing in black and white. It has so much character, so much color, that you don't even need colors when it comes to New York City. It just looks fantastic in black and white.
Absolutely. I love it. And I like the interest in those films that do like the black and white and color. What is that called when they do something?
Okay.
When they'll do a movie like in black and white, and then they'll do most of it in color, and it kind of like flip flop. I'm trying to see what movie title that I can bring up that I've seen it in.
I mean, I think I might have seen some films like that, but can't think on top of my head.
Yeah, I think it was one movie that was real popular that got an award here lately. What was the name of that movie? I can't think of it. I know it's going to come to me later on in the interview, but I find everything you're saying quite fascinating. So go ahead, Yolanda. I just wanted to bring it up.
Well, you know, there's so much to be said about, you know, the amazing gifts that you have, you know, to a lot of what you've put towards within your career in the entertainment. And You've done a lot of you know, focused study in acting too. You took in the Miser technique, and I know a little bit about it. But you know, what was your experience learning these techniques, especially when you learned from Kevin Spacey? I thought that was just awesome, amazing that you learned from him.
So I mean, the thing with I really believe in training. You know, I think that training is very important in anything that you really want to do, right? And some people are naturally great, you know, and that's amazing if you're natural. But even if you're natural, training helps. Like, either you're talking about sports, you're talking about art, and anything that you say or do, I think the training helps. So then I really wanted to be an actor, and I really thought that if I am serious about making it as a career, it would be a good idea to train. And I was fortunate to be in New York City. I mean, New York City has one of the best teachers and best acting in the world, like with the Broadway and theater and everything. It's just amazing. So I was fortunate to, you know, I did some small things at New York Film Academy and met some really good teachers. But eventually I decided to commit to a long-term program, like, you know, where you can really learn, because that's mm-hmm. also important, the duration of training. And it's like almost 2 years program called Meisner Technique, I'm sure you've heard of it. And it's considered the method acting techniques. by this great, great acting teacher, Sanford Meisner, who came up with that. And it was amazing. I mean, they have wonderful exercises from repetitions to, like, you know, improv, how you respond to a moment. I think what I really learned from that was, you know, how to be truthful in a moment, because acting is reacting, right? Like, if you're just trying to play something the way you think, that would never come out as natural, right? The audience is smart. They can see if you're being natural or not.
Absolutely.
So that really helped me understand to be in that moment, right? Get yourself in that character's shoes, right? And absorb the character. And then the big thing, which it is, like, you know, when you have two people in a scene, and since I'll say as an actor, that was something I struggled with, right? I always thought I was good, but you know, the chemistry, what you see, like, two actors together, does it really work? Because am I just acting my lines, or am I in the scenes and living the life of that character? And what happens? And when somebody else says something, do I respond in a certain way? Which I think is an important part of acting. And when you train something like Meisner Technique and others, there's various other programs that are great too. But it really helped me understand the importance of, you know, reacting truthfully to something that's being said. And that's, I think that's the difference between good acting and great acting.
Absolutely. Which method do you more cling to? It seems like you cling more to the method acting. Is that right? Or do you have other preferred techniques as well?
I'll say that, and that that's an interesting question, right? You know, you train, but I would always say that you do what works for you, right? And not every character is like that, where you can apply method acting. So I think it, for me, depends on the character. Like, I just earlier this year I did an off-Broadway play called Sandstorm, and it was about, like, 11th century Baghdad, where, you know, it was a golden period in Baghdad, and how the winds were turning, how Islam was getting more radical. And I played character of this radical Islamic scholar who was really believes in Islam, and he's trying to change the world. And it was something for me very interesting to understand how people get so strongly motivated on a subject. Very politically charged time right now, right? Where people are very passionate about whatever it is they believe in. And I took that opportunity in that sense to, like, you know, talk to people, do research, and put myself in that character, that how somebody can get so far, you know, left or right, whatever position you hold, but so passionate about something that you believe in that you forget everything else. You forget people you love. You forget people you care about. So it was a combination of many techniques. I think when I was doing that, it was close to method acting, where I really tried to put myself in, which is very stressful, very draining. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where the reality of the character comes, and that's what audience can see and relate to, because you're being truthful. You're showing them something that they will not be able to see otherwise, through as an actor. And I think that's actor's responsibility, to show audience things that they won't be able to see otherwise. And different techniques, including method acting, really help in being able to pull that.
Wow. It without me even seeing this film, I want to see this film that you were in. And I know that you're a man, as I pull from my research, that you are a man that really is passionate about filtering diversity and immersing yourself into finding a claim and understanding from other perspectives of what diversity is, and you're passionate about that. Where does that come from?
Well, thank you for bringing that up, but I think it's very important, right? I am a brown man, right? so I'm not a white man. I'm an immigrant. I came to the 12 years ago from India. I was born and raised in India, and I came here 12 years ago, and I chose this country as my home. like you know, like many of our ancestors did, right? In America, it's a country of immigrants. Some came by will, some were forced into coming here, but there's very few people who originally belong here. And now this country's been, I sometimes feel like, you know, people forget that we are all different, but we are all one. And, you know, there's sections of people or genders, like, you know, either it's women, there's people of color, black, brown, Asian, who are comparatively disadvantaged because they do not have equal opportunity, right? I was very fortunate to have a great job and a great career, and, you know, that's how I came to America. So I did not have to go through certain struggles that people who are born here have to go through. But when I switched my career in this direction, I had to face those challenges too of not being a white man in an entertainment industry. It's much better than it used to be, and I agree it's hard for anyone. What you guys are doing, you're in entertainment business yourself. It's hard as you know, a woman of color. You're doing this wonderful thing. It's hard for anyone, but when you're a person of color, it becomes so much harder. And I just don't. I like, you know, I strongly believe that all voices need to be heard, right? We all live in this country. Yeah. All our voices are important. And unless all our voices are heard, we cannot live in a beautiful, harmonious, equal world if we don't have equal opportunity. If I get to promote that, I would do anything and everything to make that happen.
Wow. It's magnificent that you are so immersed into making this prolific and making it very, you know, very come to the very surface of what it truly means and what our diversity means in society. And it is ever changing and ever evolving, you know, as we go on, you know, to into the future. And this is what basically Miss Woody, she stands upon herself. So I heard her in the background like, yes.
Yes, I know, yes.
No, Miss Woody, I'm with you. I mean, that's the thing. And we have to tell our stories, right? I think we are in a time with technology and everything else available, like you are doing as well right here, that you have to take ownership of telling your stories. You know, I don't want to be, you know, rude or paranoid, but we cannot rely on the system or the people who have been doing this for decades or, you know, centuries. We have to come forward and tell our stories. And I know that our stories are beautiful enough that the people want to hear them. People want to know them. And when we do that, that's how the narrative is going to change. So, you know, it's very important that we take that role at every step possible as storytellers, as, you know, as podcasters, as a writer and actor, or as a producer, or as a person living on this planet, living on this country. We take every opportunity to tell our stories and show that we are the same. We are people too. We have stories. We have value.
Yeah, I love that. And I had to be creative with telling my story, being a comedian. And when I mentioned the title of my documentary, people laugh, but it is a subject title that is not so funny. But the title of my documentary and my story is called The Day I Almost Went Postal. And me being a comedian, people instantly laugh, but it's a very serious story about dealing with bullying in the workplace. But I just, you know, had to bring that up when you were saying about telling your story and being creative about telling your story.
Congratulations on that. I mean, it makes me very happy. And I think that's another thing which I strongly believe is supporting each other, right? We cannot just be fighting our own fight for ourselves. Right. If you're telling a wonderful story, it's my responsibility to hear it, support you as in any way possible that I can to get it out there. And we all have to do it for each other. And the moment we start doing that, it wouldn't take long for so many beautiful stories to be around and people to see us as people with value. And that's how the world changes, actually. I think that's the biggest reason I wanted to be a storyteller, that I had a job, a career, and, you know, where I was making a lot of money. I was quite successful, thankfully. But I wanted to do something at some point, something more meaningful, which I was not able to do in the business world. Because as storytellers, you know, we have much more power than people realize. We write the history of the world by the way we tell the stories, right? We show people. I was fortunate enough a few months ago to meet the great, you know, Robert De Niro. And I had a very short conversation with him, and he's very kind with and generous with his time. But that's exactly what he said, that as storytellers, either we are actors, writers, producers, podcasts, or it's our responsibility to tell the stories and help the stories to propagate and reach to people who do not know about them. Because the biggest problem, the problems we have in the world is people don't know. They just know what they know about themselves. They don't know about others. And you fear what you don't know. But when you learn about others through those stories, the fear dissipates and you start, if not loving, at least respecting them as people. And that's where things start to change.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. You know, it's just like the story that I, because I'm also, I've written a screenplay myself, and it's based upon two aspects, you know, of you know, African Muslims, and also about Mansa, who was the wealthiest man, you know, in history. And it's not really said in the history books. You won't find his story. You'll have to actually research and find that story. But no one ever matched his wealth. But he was also Muslim, too, an African Muslim. And he actually conquered Timbuktu. And and I was, you know, that story. And it's sort of like a reflection. And it actually reflects, you know, in the same realms as, you know, periodical history within, you know, the 60s history when it comes to the riots with, you know, and the Malcolm X era at that point. So, you know, and it's true. You know, you have to, when we look at the media, it says a lot, you know, what's true, what's not true. And people now more than ever want to hear more truth and whenever they can find it. And, you know, there's so much out there that that you can research. And I know that you have to be the most creative man out there, because at 16 years old, you won an award for writing, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, that was my one night of glory. Yeah, I was 16, and there was a national competition to write a play. And I used to write, and I think I was writing when I was 7 or 8. I would write like plays in the school. Like I would read something here and there, and I would write my own play, and we'll do it in like school performances and stuff like that. So I was always writing and stuff, and then I was writing for school magazines, you know, the different kind of stories and poems and stuff like that. But then there was this national competition, and I was like, well, I got to do this. And I wrote this play about, if you know, in India and many, you know, underdeveloped countries, there's child labor. And it's changing, but, you know, it's still a problem, children having to work. And yeah. So I wrote a play around this kid who is basically working and supporting his family, an 8-year-old boy, and a day in his life, what happens and how his life completely transforms in a day because of his history and everything, and it was because his father was. So, you know, it was... I don't know where and how I actually got it from, because, you know, you write from your life experiences and stuff and things you see around. And I had, you know, my father was in Air Force, so I traveled a lot around. And you travel, then you get lots of experiences from traveling. So I put that all together and I wrote it. And next thing you know, I mean, I had won a national award in that. And, you know, it was great. It was a great experience for that night. I think, I don't know if I was fully prepared to appreciate and admire what I was getting. You know, again, I was very young and I was still in high school and everything, but that was great. But that did give me confidence, right? I think every award, I really believe, right, that any award and stuff, well, what does it mean? The recognition only means just that it gives you confidence that, yes, you know, somebody believes in what I do or appreciates what I do. I don't think you create art just for yourself. That's the thing I strongly believe in. I know some people, like, I don't care if anybody likes it or not, but I think you're in the wrong business if that's your attitude, you know. Okay, everybody may not like what you're doing, and that's normal. But I assume you do care about somebody liking and appreciating it. So that's, I mean, that award was a big confidence booster at that time. But then after that, I went to engineering and everything. But that was one of the reasons I kept going back to writing besides acting, that I was like, you know, I did that, and it was a great experience, and it was a good story. I think I can write. And as I was talking earlier, you know, when you start telling your story, especially as a person of color, right, you know, you have to create your own content at some point. You can't rely on other people to write for you because they don't know you. They don't know your experiences. Absolutely. If they do, they won't be able to tell the stories honestly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that award at 16 is what gave me confidence to write screenplays and stuff now. And I think I had shared earlier that, you know, we just... working currently on a movie screenplay with the independent studio here in New York, a feature film with a writing partner of mine, and you know that's, and many other things are also brewing. Besides that, I'm working on a TV show, that a TV pilot, and another movie. That all comes from things that started when I was young, and you know, that award at 16, which brought me here to do the things that I'm doing right now.
You know, people are definitely that are listening in are going to be looking forward to seeing more of your work, because you are a literal champion when it comes to writing. I mean, you have a magazine that you are part, that you lead, I believe. You're the chief editor, I think, for the New York Eye.
Yes. My New York Eye. That was a passion project with a friend and, you know, writing partner now of mine, Paxo Sandoval, who is in New York, and, you know, started that to share stories, the same idea, right? New York is wonderful, and there's a lot of stuff that you get to hear, but there's so much that you don't get to hear. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I get to do something about it and share things that people don't get to hear about. Go, you know, either it's a restaurant, or either it's a TV, you know, either it's a Broadway show, off-Broadway show, a theater, and, you know, there's so many small nice things, a musical event, and independent film, and, you know, and stuff like that, that, you know, gets lost in so much noise, because there's so much noise right now. So I decided to start that, and, you know, it's been great. It's been great. I've had the opportunity to talk to and meet with and collaborate with wonderful people through my New York Eye, and, you know, help them, give them a platform to, again, share their voice and share their stories that they're creating and things that they're doing.
I always commend those who are, you know, very passionate enough to share their own original content. I love original work, because it doesn't come from anywhere else but the passion of those who create it. And I would love to get a copy of my New York Eye, if I can get it. Where can someone find your magazine?
Yeah, you can go to mynewyorkeye.com, and, you know, most of our stuff is there. And with My New York Eye, we're also producing original content, and we did a short film, Culture of All of 5 Cents Each, which won multiple awards and in the film festival circle. That was a story of, you know, these guys who pick bottles and cans for recycle. So it was a story of a guy, a day in his life as he goes through the city picking bottles and cans, and how people treat him for what he is. We created that. We did a documentary short around the same subject of people who pick bottles and cans. So we're also working along with, you know, giving platform to other people and doing interviews and helping people get their voice out. We're creating original content as well with My New York Eye.
Oh, wow. And something made me choose that particular movie poster for this particular movie that you created, 5 Cents. Is 5 Cents, is that right, for your film?
Yeah, Kachrawala, 5 Cents Each. The Kachrawala basically is a Hindi word which means, like, the, you know, trash man. and 5 cents each is because, you know, those bottles have, like, you know, each bottle is 5 cents, right? So that's where the title comes from, 5 cents each.
Oh, wow, amazing, amazing. Something made me choose that to talk about this this amazing experience speaking with you on the podcast show this evening, and it really spoke to me. Where can someone find your current film that you're creating for 5 cents each?
Well, we haven't released it in public yet because we were still doing like festivals and stuff. But I think the best way to keep up is, you know, mynewyorkeye.com. Everything that's happening, we keep updating there. And for my own work, like artshreyan.com, my first name, last name, artshreyan.com, is I update everything and anything that's going on. So we have produced and we plan on bringing that film uploading for public later this year. And then another project that we are working on that's around substance abuse and opioid crisis. That project that I'm writing and working on that's probably gonna be out next year. So yeah, there's a few things that are brewing, and mynewyorkeye.com and artreon.com is the best place to keep up. I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, everything. Mm-hmm. Just find me. You know, that's the best way these days to just find out what people are doing, right? You know, they're all out there. Check that out.
Yes. And I one thing I can definitely relate to when it comes to creative art, my oldest son is a graduate of the Art Institute of Chicago, and he has artwork everywhere. And I love creative people. And I know people like what I do as a comedian, but just to dip and dab with arts and technology and mixing it, I love it. Especially when it comes to filmmaking.
Comedy is hard. Comedy is hard. I feel like making people laugh is one of the hardest things to do, and also one of the best things to do, because, you know, you're giving them joy. So what you do, that's amazing.
I love it. Absolutely. I'm out in the community. I just love just freestyling and just off the dome talking to people, and then just having a comedic reaction just with a normal conversation. It's just a natural thing that us comedians do. You can just, you know, go right into a stand-up act just by having a simple conversation with someone. But yes, thank you for that. Some people just don't know. It's not the easiest thing, but when it comes naturally for us, then it's not really that hard. But I love it.
That's a story for next time. But yeah, I did try my hand on stand-up once, and I very quickly realized that it was not for me. I should stick to acting and writing. Stand-up is a completely different kind of art form. You know, it's very hard to have people, you know, make people laugh telling jokes in that kind of setting. So yeah, I commend what you do, and I don't think I can do that. So I have more respect for that.
You definitely have to know the audience and have a feel for them. And every joke that you tell can be turned into something that could be dark or light, or it all depends on the audience. You have to know how to deliver it and basically say it in a sensitive way, depending on the audience, but you definitely have to have some creativity when delivering your jokes, depending on the audience.
Absolutely, you know, it's such an amazing experience speaking with you this evening, Art, and I want to say that we want to keep up to date with everything you're doing, because you're creating a lot of things that are. That are yet to come, and that people are probably going to be on the edge of their seats with anticipation to find out more about it. I want to thank you so much for coming and being on the podcast show, Mr. Art. And, we're definitely going to keep up to date with you and have to do a part two again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Yolanda and Miss Woody. I mean, this is wonderful. You guys are amazing. I really appreciate what you're doing. You know, you're bringing voices of so many people and sharing with the world. Like, you know, you have a passion for storytelling. I can, you know, and sharing people's stories. And that's, I have so much respect for that. I love that. And yes, I would absolutely love to be back and share more. You know, this is going on. As I said, I'm working on so many things, especially on the writing front. There's a movie, there's a TV show, there's another movie. It's a lot of things that are brewing right now, but you know the nature of the business, right? You know, things take their own time. There's only as much control as you have. So yeah, things are brewing. I would love to share more everything else that's happening, and I can't wait to be back. But until then, thank you so much for having me, and have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend, Mr. Art. And thank you again. We're looking forward to having you again on the show. And that's everyone. That's Mr. Art from the upcoming independent film that will be coming out. And we'll talk about that more later on Radio and TV Entertainment, AM, FM, Pocket Show. Thank you, Mrs. Woody. Thank you, Mr. Art, for being on the show. Bye, everyone.
Chapter 1. How to Rise to the Top When Everybody There Is Already. Think you've got talent? You're not alone. The power of the internet, YouTube, and reality television has created a big pool of famous and not so famous people. So how do you rise to the top in your career, especially as an actor or actress in Hollywood, when it seems so crowded above? These three tips will help you make the moves to superstardom and stretch your 15 minutes of fame as a movie star into an hour. Get trained. What separates the actors from the imitators? Their respect for the craft of acting. Before you spend money on headshots, find the best acting, singing, and dancing classes in your area, and invest in your career. The most talented people in the business continually train with acting coaches to prepare for roles. They don't take their gift for granted. It is quite possible to have the innate talent for a particular art, but the successful entertainers who continue to work in the entertainment industry have developed their art over time. Acquire multiple skills. Become a Jack or Jill of all trades. The stars of the future will write, produce, and direct their own projects. Don't get lost by having only one skill that can make you money. Become an actor, director, writer, producer, and even a model. Can't write? Collaborate with a young filmmaker who needs an actor or fresh new face for his or her projects. The top money makers in show business look for ways to increase their market share and find opportunities to promote their multiple skills. You must diversify your talent to stay relevant. Create your own products. Be a trendsetter. Want to be the next Berry Gordy, Steven Spielberg, Mark Burnett, or Oprah Winfrey? Create an amazing product. Become an expert in your field. But you can't be a trend follower. You must be a trend setter. Don't better the worst product. Better the best. Gordy is a musical genius. Spielberg is a film mastermind. Mark Burnett is the whiz kid of reality TV. Oprah is a successful talk show maven and the new product's best girlfriend. Find a niche, create products, and sell. But the products you create must be phenomenal, not average, not mediocre. Think like the greats. Improve upon their successes. Create amazing products that your audience can't live without. Famous people of the future are increasing their knowledge, creating products, and diversifying their talents. Some of these innovators are stealing the thunder from established stars that are still following the old rules found in the star-making playbook. Use my suggestions to stay ahead of the next group of reality stars and home video masterminds. If not, you might disappear before you even enter the game. Chapter 2. Finding ways to make money using your artistic. Whether you have great musical talent, the ability to paint, or have outstanding writing prowess, you may be able to find ways to make money by using your talent. You certainly should use these skills to your advantage and not let them become wasted on just a recreational hobby. Musicians have so many different venues to go out and sell their talent, while a real, serious artist might still be able to sell their work if they can get their work exposed to the public eye. Writers often have a tough time trying to get their work published, but have outlets like short story and freelance opportunities as well to make a buck. While the most common stumbling block for an artist to find ways to make money is often their hardline stance on not wanting to be a sellout and wanting to keep their trade pure, this will often keep the artist very poor until they are dead. The smart ones will get out in the marketplace and try and get their art sold to as many people as they can. Quite a lot of musicians will work as cover bands or do things like weddings and school proms to make a buck, and writers will sell their work writing things they have little interest in just to gain notoriety and bring in the cash as well. This is often the price an artist has to pay before they are established in their venue of choice. If you are someone who has a talent, you may want to start looking for ways to make money from that talent, even if it is a weekend gig just doing kids' birthday parties as a juggling cowboy or singing with a Beatles cover band. It will allow you to make some money doing what you are good at and potentially open some doors for you to expand off of that talent. No matter what it is you ultimately want to do with your life, letting your artistic skills find ways to make money for you cannot hurt. You never know how far your talent may take you these days, as the avenues to exposure on a grand scale are more plentiful than they used to be. From YouTube to American Idol, there are many roads to success these days. The best thing you can do is try your hand at as many paths as possible and see where it leads. If it never works out for you, so be it. You can return to your boring 9-to-5 day job and keep singing on the weekends. Chapter 3: How to Make Money from Your Crafts and Art. If you are someone who enjoys putting together artistic projects, you can turn this into an opportunity to make extra money online. Whether you paint, make jewelry, take photographs, or craft other pieces of artwork together, you can turn this into a money-making activity. People are often willing to pay for different artworks which they enjoy, and as long as your works actually have artistic merit, you will have a good chance at making money from them. There are a few different websites available which can help you sell crafts and other pieces of art that you may have put together. By running searches and looking through some of the listings offered, you may be able to determine which website your pieces will fit into best. Taking the time to do your research will help you make extra money online, as you will know the best places to put your talents without wasting your time. Should you start to make extra money online through your art projects, you will only be inspired to spend more time working on them. This will serve two purposes in your life. Not only will you be bringing in some extra cash, which always helps, but you will also be able to spend time doing something that you genuinely love. This goal, which started out simply as a way to make extra money online, will turn into a great chance for you to develop your talents and skills and grow as an artist. It is definitely an opportunity which should be explored by anyone who is serious about developing their talents. Chapter 4: The Right Way to Use YouTube to Promote You. When we think of social media, YouTube is not really at the top of the list in the mind of an entrepreneur. It is less about social interaction and more of a good place to go for some distraction. This might be the case, but that doesn't mean it cannot be an integral part of marketing your brand online as an entertainer. What makes YouTube a social site is how easy it is for users to share the content with other people, as well as the ability to leave comments and subscribe to the channels they like. It is another way for a brand to reach its target audience online and grow its reputation as an industry leader. YouTube has the lowest average bounce rate of all the social networks. It is the continuous engagement from users that make it a channel that holds onto attention better than most. People are able to simply watch content instead of scroll and read. Another thing to consider is just how enormous YouTube's reach is. Over 1 billion unique visitors. That is a huge market that is largely untapped by so many businesses today. YouTube is a great channel for brands of all sizes in the entertainment world. Even for bloggers who are eager to grow their readership and build up their personal brand can take advantage of the simple platform by uploading videos. So, as a brand, what should you be doing to get the most of all that YouTube can offer? First, fill out your profile completely. It is the same on every social network. You don't want to leave holes. Make sure that you are giving as much information about yourself as possible. Visitors want to see your info when they click on your profile, so don't leave them disappointed. Then, give your channel a good description. The channel description is like an introduction letter. It lets people know who you are and what they can expect when they watch your videos. This doesn't have to be a great work of literature, simply a brief statement about who you are, what types of videos you will be posting, and how often. Be sure to use your keywords in your description to make your channel easier to find through a user search. Be sure to include links. On your About page, it is always a good idea to include the links to your other social sites, like Twitter and Facebook, plus a direct link to your website or blog. This is a good way to get more people engaging with your brand outside of YouTube and build your fan base. Give your page some love. You can personalize your channel art in YouTube by adding a profile picture. Make sure that it is something reflective of your brand by using your logo, colors, and even your own picture. Stay active. You don't want people visiting your page and only finding a few videos that you posted at the dawn of time. Always create new videos to post to your channel. Interact with your followers by responding to any comments that they leave. Send out a thank you when they subscribe. You can see anything being discussed on your channel under the Discussion tab. The more active you are with your channel, the bigger your audience is going to get. It is also a good idea to embed your videos into blog posts, status updates on social media, or on your website. This is a good way for you to add channel subscribers from those who are already following you elsewhere. YouTube is a key part of any marketing strategy. Are you using it for your brand?
Radio and TV, entertainment, AM, FM, podcast show. Yolanda Nolly.
Another day. Another psychosis. Well, actually, Quack, the clinical term is a neurosis.
What do you mean? You're my neurosis. I mean, you're my psychosis. I mean, because every day is everyone else's and you as my psychosis.
Well, why are we getting personal, Quack?
Well, hey, that's what I live. That's who I am. Another day. Another psychosis.
Morning, Marge.
Oh, it's you. Finally decided to show up for work, huh? Before you give me some half-baked, pitiful excuse like the dog ate my gas pedal, aliens stole my underwear, or my personal favorite, you had a gray matter leak in your brain and were waiting for the plumber. Give me one good reason, just one, why I shouldn't give you your walking papers right now.
You know, technically, Marge is correct, Quack. These fabrications cloak a dormant inbred desire to shrug responsibility and return to infancy with a poopy diaper.
With a what?
I'm waiting.
One good reason, March? I'll give you three. How about, this is my office, you're my secretary, and you work for me?
Oh? Well then, good morning, Dr. Quack.
I'll be in my office. Why do I even put up with her? She harasses the patients, lets the phone ring off the hook, and couldn't type a decent letter at gunpoint.
As you colligate these facts, I must admit that was a little drastic.
The gun wasn't loaded anyway. Hey, wait a minute! Why am I even talking to you, Zig? You don't exist! You're just a figment in my mind!
Fine. I'm here with you day and night to help you with your psychosis. And you treat me like some bad sushi left for months in the bottom of a desk drawer.
Ugh, I wondered what that smell was. Thanks. Regardless, I'm the psychiatrist here. Me, Dr. Quack. Doctor, understand? What do you think the DR in front of my name means?
Delusional regression, if I took a clinical stab at it.
Very funny, Zig. That's your opinion.
Excuse me, Mr. Delusional Regression. Your next patient is here.
Tell him I need a few minutes.
I'm smelling the pungent aroma of a soiled diaper again, Quack.
Look, I treat imaginary characters, and I can't even get rid of you. Maybe I should just end it all.
That's irrational. And I refuse to be the one to add to your own destruction by telling you the gun is under your latest issue of Mallard Girl magazine in your top drawer.
Oh, thanks, maybe. Maybe I'm just tired and hungry. I'm kind of short on money, and...
I would allocate the funds, but I left them in my other attire.
Ah, gotcha! You don't even have the money, 'cause you don't exist! Now, who's the best psychologist?
Both of us.
Why?
I purposely failed to tell you where the bullets were. So, Quack, how long have you had this fixation with self-destruction, when I could easily sell tickets or send you spam emails?
Another day, another psychosis.